You're listening to a DM podcast.
Hello and welcome to Kinky History, the podcast where we discuss all of the dirty little secrets they probably left out of your history books. I'm Esme Louise James. Today we are discussing the first ever pornographic novel. What does pornography look like to you? Pornography as we know it today comes in so many forms. It can be videos that we watch on our phone. It can be movies that we enjoy with a partner. It could be photos that we find erotic, which turn us on, or it could even be badly written fan fiction, which we find on the internet. Pornography today is such a massive industry which so many of us have been exposed to in some way or another. It's something that some of us will watch or engage with every single day, and others maybe once in a blue moon. But whatever way that you engage or have been exposed to pornography, it's fair to say that for many of us, it feels like a relatively new thing. Pornography isn't something that we think about being throughout history. We don't think about mediums that potentially people went to get turned on as we do today. But that's why I'm here to disrupt that cultural myth. Pornography, even before it was defined, existed in so many forms. And the novel that we are going to be looking at today was one of the very first attempts to write smut pornography. Published in 1748, John Cleveland's Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure, otherwise known as Fanny Hill, is now considered one of the first erotic novels. It was pretty much an instant bestseller in a lot of senses, but it didn't make many of the authority figures of the time overly happy. In fact, on the day that it was first published, there was an earthquake that actually shook all of London, and one religious figure went as far as to say that it was John Cleveland's novel that had caused this earthquake and brought down the wrath of God. And it wasn't until about a year in, November 1749, after the first installment of the book was published, that it was really brought to authoritative attention. Cleveland was arrested along with his publisher, and he was brought to court under the charge of corrupting the king's subjects. This is basically because of the very explicit sexual content of the novel, the fact that it did the absolute radical thing of depicting female sexuality, and most importantly, because of its inclusion of a homosexual love scene. It's also important to remember that the term pornography hadn't even emerged as a term yet, and this book was really influential in even defining what pornography is. Up until that stage, we'd had erotic sonnets coming out of Italy. Pietro Arentino, who we will talk about, I'm sure, in another podcast episode, was publishing some very obscene sonnets alongside pornographic pictures, and we can kind of see the origins of what would become pornography. John Cleveland was arguably very inspired by the work that Arentino had done. At the time that he was writing, the novel was just emerging as a different form of media, and for the most part, it was very much tied to lowbrow reading, to women's novels, and things not necessarily considered to be of literary merit. I think what's so incredible about John Cleveland's work is that he takes these new and emerging forms and makes what is now a really funny, horny piece of smut. We should really get into the juicy details of this book because I am just dying to talk about it. So without further ado, let's get to it. The novel details the exploits of Fanny Hill, a sex worker working within London, as she details over the course of two letters all of the scandalous stages of her life and writes the truth, the stark, naked truth, telling her friend absolutely everything about what she got up to over her career as a sex worker. She details her queer encounters with Phoebe as she is initiated into the world of Vice via a lesbian fingering scene. She details her orgies as she goes into brothels, and she details her exploits with fetishes as she is made to whip and be whipped and entertain the more peculiar sexual proclivities of others that she encounters, such as one man who just wants to stroke her hair. She details the world of homosexuality, which terrifies her to her core and leaves us with two amazing and quite amusing near-anal scenes. I think it's very clear to see how a novel of this caliber would be quite controversial to an 18th century British public. Especially at the time, England was really undergoing a period of considerable change when it came to sexuality and gender. We were really changing what it meant to be a man and a woman. We were becoming far more strict on prosecution of homosexuality. So a novel detailing the lived realities of a sex worker was definitely something that was not going to go down with an increasingly religious public. What I think this novel marks as a fantastic example for, and why I do believe it has such historical merit, is that it reminds us that pornography is something that has been around and appealed to humans for as long as we have had a history. This book was fun and amusing, and it was titillating, and it was engaging. People would take the book and they would burn it after reading, pretending that they'd never gotten off with it. It was at one stage described as a book that you would read with one hand, presumably because the other one was quite occupied. And I think it's a great example of the kind of fantasies that were amusing people all the way back 200 years ago that still appeal to us today. The scenes of BDSM flagellation or orgies between multiple women, these are the exact same fantasies that we're still continuing to engage with and type into Pornhub today. I think it's such a great historical marker about the fact we haven't changed. In fact, this book remains the most read pornographic novel in history. People are still coming back to this novel, and I think it's because it has something weirdly wholesome about it. It's not because it's clean by any means. The descriptions are quite graphic, but there's something so genuine about someone who necessarily didn't set out to write pornography, but was just trying to kind of write about some fantasies and maybe knowledge of what it looked like to be a prostitute in London at the time. Now, some of the accuracies of the novel are quite laughable, and critics have had a field day pointing out the fact that Fanny, in all her encounters, never really gets pregnant or gets an STI, things that definitely would not have happened at the time. It's by no means meant to be a genuine representation of prostitution, but it does say something about the interesting realities of what people thought sex work looked like in London. We don't really know if this was all a fantasy of Cleveland's wild imagination or whether this came from his own experience. So the book was originally written in two different installments, with Fanny writing a kind of penthouse-esque letter to her friend explaining how she went from being a lowly sex worker to a wealthy woman married and happy in life. So we begin as Fanny sits down to write the letter detailing the scandalous stages of her life, written with the same liberty by which she led it. She promises to tell us the truth, the stark naked truth, leaving nothing to the imagination and nothing off the table. So when Fanny first arrives in London and is kind of tricked into becoming a sex worker, her first sexual awakening is actually with a woman. Phoebe, her bedfellow, is inflicted with the arbitrary taste, having not a hatred for men, but preferring her own sex to them. On their first night together, Phoebe's hands decide to go for a little bit of a wander, introducing Fanny to all of the pleasures by which she had been completely innocent until this time. She states that her libaceous touches had lighted up a fresh new fire that wantoned through all of her veins, but fixed with violence in that center appointed to them by nature. Phoebe decides to scream out, "Oh, what a charming creature thou art! What a happy man will be the first that makes a woman of you! Oh, if only I were that man for your sake!" Fanny finds herself absolutely addicted to the sexual pleasure which Phoebe awakens within her, but quickly, after observing another sexual scene that takes place in the brothel, in which Phoebe and Fanny actually go and hide in a cupboard and watch another couple in the brothel fucking, which I think is a really fun little scene. So you just kind of have these two women fingering one another in this closet, watching two other people fuck, which is where Fanny realizes that such a thing as a penis exists, which is, to me, hilarious. And seeing this monstrous maypole come out of this man, Fanny finds herself desperately craving the shadow of pleasure which Phoebe cannot provide her. Luckily enough for Fanny, while wandering down one night after a long night in the brothel, she finds a man who absolutely attracts her senses and sets her alight. Fanny falls desperately in love with this man who doesn't get the nicest description in the novel, I have to say, considering this guy is meant to be like the love interest of Fanny all throughout this novel. She very much describes him as lacking genius, being better suited for a life of domestic pleasure, and just kind of really emphasizes how dumb the guy is for the entire novel. However, deciding to run off with this lover who quickly abandons her because of circumstance, Fanny finds herself once again desperate and on the streets. Luckily, she is taken in by a rich and wealthy man to be his mistress. This wasn't actually necessarily an uncommon position for some sex workers of the time. You would kind of have various levels. You would have what were termed streetwalkers, which were far more common and the reality of most sex work within London. You would have the kind of brothel that Fanny first finds herself in, you know, which was quite a bawdy, drunken, and unsafe environment for the most part. But if you did get quite lucky, you could be taken in as a kept mistress and provided for, as Fanny was, with an apartment and clothes and servants and all of the rest. So Fanny finds herself in quite a nice position to start the novel, but it doesn't last for very long. Finding out that her kept master is also having some entertaining horizontal tangos with other women, Fanny decides to take matters into her own hands. And in quite a girl boss gaslight mood, Fanny decides to turn her attention onto a servant who catches her attention. She, over the course of weeks, decides to seduce him, stripping down in front of him and showing off her naked breasts, until one day she finally has the opportunity to bring him to her bed and explore what turns out to be a very large, enormous cock. So this is a little bit as Fanny seduces her new man called William to her bed and discovers for the first time his enormous horse cock. Curious then, and eager to unfold such an alarming mystery, playing as it were with his buttons, which were bursting ripe from the active force within, those of his waistband and foreflap flew open at a touch, when it started out, and now, disengaged from the shirt, I saw with wonder and surprise what? Not the plaything of a boy, not the weapon of a man, but a maypole of such enormous a standard that, had proportions been observed, it must have belonged to a young giant. Its prestigious size made me shirk again, yet I could not, without pleasure, behold and venture to feel such a length, such a breadth of animated ivory, perfectly well turned and fashioned with proud stiffness. Fanny absolutely simps after this cock for about 3 pages, which I find incredibly amusing, describing it as an object of terror and delight. He was so nobly stocked that she worries that he run the risks of ruining that tender part of her because it was such an oversized machine. Fanny really puts her fears to the side for this one, and with a stiff upper lip, she decides to go in. He pierces, penetrates, and by length, winning his way inch by inch, gets entirely in, and finally a mighty thrust sheaths his way to the guard. I like that Fanny is like in so much pain within this scene, but she still is just like describing the insufferable size of his weapon and being like, I must do it for science's sake. After this, her sugar daddy kind of comes back in and she has to like pretend that she's sick because she doesn't want to fuck him, because she knows that if he sees her right now, he'll find that her labia has become quite inflamed. John Cleland describes it as her lips, and that she might have some leftover liquid and she might be a little bit more pink. I think this is actually quite an admirable description of the female anatomy from John Cleveland, considering how little sex education was kind of done at the time. There's also an instance like just before this where Fanny decides to put a pillow underneath her back to kind of lift herself up and better fit in this giant cock. And again, love that. I feel like John Cleveland has definitely had a little bit of a discussion with a few women in his life. So all props to him. Sadly for Fanny, her exploits are soon found out and her sugar daddy drops her, leaving her once again on the streets. Luckily for her, she finds her way to a new brothel. This one I would best describe as a sapphic haven of lesbian activity. But in her first initiation into this brothel, we have this kind of orgy scene between 3 of the investors of the brothel and these 4 girls all together. And they one by one decide to have sex in front of the group, each couple. And all of the girls kind of cheer one another on. And once they've had sex, you know, they rain each other down with kisses and caresses and congratulate one another for being so pretty and for taking penis so well. In this like really beautiful sapphic scene, which isn't explicitly gay, but it's very gay. It's a very gay scene. But Fanny very much finds herself at home here in this this new endeavor and school of sex. And so she starts to become a little bit more experimental. Her brothel madam sends her out to more and more freaky clients, including one called Mr. Norbert, who has a fetish for virgins. Fanny by this stage is very much not a virgin, but that's okay. Mrs. Cole knows a good solution for Fanny. To appease Mr. Norbert's desire, Fanny is instructed to take a little vial of animal blood and hide it beneath the mattress. After kind of holding her body in a slight angle to make it feel a little bit tighter for Mr. Norbert than it may otherwise be, Fanny dashes blood on the bed sheets after they have spent themselves to kind of demonstrate that she is a virgin. This was a very popular technique all the way back in the medieval ages. We understand that there was a kind of guide that women would pass around in the medieval era, providing different solutions and tricks to kind of fake your virginity, even though virginity is just a construct and doesn't really exist. Women who didn't bleed during their first time, which, you know, a lot of women don't, could actually be prosecuted and face some pretty horrible consequences. And so these guides would kind of come around during the medieval times and the Middle Ages. We're providing different solutions on how to fake your virginity. Some of the best ones being to place a leech on your labia so it forms a scab, and during intercourse, that scab can just kind of like tear it off so you start to bleed. Another one was the vial of goat's blood, which is used by Fanny. And other ones are a bit more logical, like trying to plan your wedding night strategically during the time in which you are menstruating. But Fanny ends up with Mr. Norbert for a while, and she absolutely hates him. He is a terrible brute by the sounds of things and becomes floppy after nearly every one of her endeavors. And so, absolutely thirsty and in need of a good root, Fanny goes to find herself a good pirate who can give her a good old Jolly Rogering. He leads me to the table and with a master hand, lays my head down on the edge of it. And with the other canting up my petticoat and shift, he bears my naked posterior to his blind and furious guide. It forces its way between them, and I feel pretty sensible that he is not going about the right door. And he seems to be knocking desperately at the wrong one. I told him of it. "Pooh," he says. "My dear, any port in a storm." Altering, however, directly his court, he lowered his point and fixed it right, driving in with a delicious stiffness. I think "Pooh, my dear, any port in a storm" may be one of the best lines in all of literature from the English language, but that's my personal preference. My favourite scene of this entire novel has to be Fanny's experimentation with BDSM play. One of these arbitrary tastes which Fanny encounters is this poor man that she says is inflicted with an unnatural taste against his will. This poor man loves to be whipped and to whip people. And they kind of describe kinks in this very sympathetic way during this section. They kind of explain it as something beyond the person's control. And Fanny is encouraged to be understanding and sympathetic that he can't do anything to kind of fix his unnatural wants. And so we just have to appease them as much as we can. Which I think is a kind of interesting way that fetishes might be thought about at this time, because Fanny is very sympathetic. She doesn't necessarily enjoy it towards the end, but she's really eager to try it and to kind of see the extent to which she can find pain pleasurable. Here's a little quote describing his taste, which I think is just interesting to think about how kinks and fetishes may even have been conceived during this time by some people. He was in a habitual state of conflict and a dislike of himself, being enslaved to so peculiar a taste, and by the fatality of a constitution which rendered him incapable of receiving pleasure until he submitted to these extraordinary means of procuring it at the hands of pain. Like she says, a victim led to sacrifice. To tie this man to a benchtop, she straps in his arms and his legs, and she takes a whip in hand. She begins to whip her poor victim until he finally gets an erection. After she has whipped him and finally got him erect, he decides to return the favor. When he had thus amused himself, admiring and toying with himself, he went on to strike harder and harder, so that I needed all my patience not to cry out or complain. At last he twigged me so smartly as to fetch blood in more than one lash, at the sight of which he flung down the rod and flew to me, and kissed away the starting drops, and sucking the wounds, eased a good deal of my pain. I feel like there's always been like a very erotic connotation with blood and pain, and I think this is just such a wonderful scene. She then goes on to have probably like one of the most fantastic roots in the entire novel, in which she kind of just explains that all of the pain that had gone into her ass had left her tingling and more sensitive to the sex that they were about to participate in. And she has this kind of like fantastic appreciation of how pain can be beneficial to increasing pleasure down the line, which again kind of makes me question what Cleveland was up to in his own time. But the most controversial scene of this entire novel, which would eventually lead it to being banned, is a scene in which Fanny watches two men have sex. Out of all of the extraordinary sexual acts which Fanny encounters throughout the course of this novel, the one thing that she just cannot make sense of is two men in love. This is the one act which she just refuses to tolerate. She accidentally oversees them as she's in a hotel room, and being a bit of a nosy body, she decides to peek into the next room where there's a little hole in between the walls. And there she finds two men who have escaped from the public eye to enjoy a little me time. What I find very weird about this, considering Fanny will then faint and decide to alert the authorities, and the book very much condemns the homosexual act that they've just witnessed. This is actually probably one of the most romantic moments in the entire novel. The rest of the sex scenes, as we've kind of seen, are quite described in quite violent ways. You know, Fanny's vagina is being battered and ruined continually by prestigious maypoles. She is bleeding and screaming out in pain and enjoying herself. And then this one scene that has two guys is actually incredibly gentle. First then, moistening well with spittle his instrument, obvious to render it glib, he pointed it and introduced it, as plainly as I could discern, not only from its direction am I losing sight, but with arriving, twisting, and soft murmured complaints of the young sufferer. And now then, passing one hand around his minion's hips, he got hold of his red-topped ivory toy that stood perfectly stiff and showed that if he was like his mother behind, he was very much like his father before. After witnessing this criminal scene, Fanny goes on to alert authorities. And very weirdly, after we've just had such a sympathetic understanding of one man's desire to be whipped, Fanny is then instructed by her brothel madam that all people who entertain a homosexual desire, not that of course homosexual is a term at this time, are perverts and an abomination to God. And it feels very out of character for a book that has been otherwise so understanding about sexual desire. Now, one of the reasons behind this is because homosexuality was beginning to become more and more prosecuted within London, and people were facing far greater prosecution because of rumours that they were, as they would be termed, a sodomite. Now, Cleveland's book went to the courts regardless for corrupting the king's subjects, and you can only really imagine what would have happened if that condemnation had not been written into the novel. I think it's also worth mentioning that despite this very passionate condemnation of homosexuality, there is some rumour that John Cleveland was himself homosexual. So I think it's safe for us to kind of interpret this moment in the novel as something done quite deliberately to really save himself from prosecution. Cleveland's book remains such a polarizing novel with so many unanswered questions. It's simultaneously kind of been pronounced a feminist masterpiece and derided as a misogynistic one. It's been condemned for its unrealistic portrayals of the reality of sex work at the time, and it's also been praised for giving loyal attention to the realities of the time. No one can kind of seem to decide if it's irredeemably vulgar or this kind of charming, wholesome work of literature. And I think that's part of the beauty of the novel, to be honest. There's so many questions, not only about this novel, but about Cleveland's own life. Can we see him as a queer figure of the past whose history and sexuality has been completely erased? Is it ethical to even assume his sexuality based on an included scene within a fictional work? I think it opens up lots of questions for us to kind of consider about how we look back into history and read queer characters and works that don't kind of fit into any mold. By the end of the novel, after experiencing this wild world of sex and fetishes and kinks and queer encounters, Fanny randomly encounters once again the love of her life, who has returned from his trips abroad. And in a very quick attempt to kind of wrap up, his story, Cleveland decides that these two marry, make love, and live happily ever after. I think Cleveland is having a little bit of fun. The fact that Fanny gets fingered and prods, she experiences oral sex, near anal, whippings, everything, and then at the very end of it, kind of comes back with this tailpiece of morality and is so happy about the fact that she is a married woman with nothing to hide. I think it's a little bit of a wink about the kind of sexual prudishness of England at the time and how there was a fair bit of hypocrisy in a lot of the people who claim to be quite virtuous. That's the way that I like to read Cleveland's Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure anyway. It should also be mentioned that this book remained banned for, 260 years. It wasn't until the 1960s that this ban was actually undone. It was around the time that Ladies Chatterley's Lover also went to court and was argued as not a work of obscenity, but something that had, cultural literary merit. And the same thing went for Fanny Hill. They brought in a range of art historians and literary critics and put them on the stand to basically argue that this work has something to give. It has an insight into the history of the time. It has a representation of women's sexuality and or how men thought about women's sexuality of the time. And it has literary merit. The book is so well written and it's fun to read. It's erotic and it's humorous and it's silly and it's serious. It's all of those things, and I am incredibly grateful that it was finally overturned and now today remains our most read pornographic novel of all time. So let this be a sign to get off of Pornhub and Wattpad and see instead if you can get a copy of an 18th century novel to enjoy in bed when the mood strikes you. And if you decide to take a break from your literary exploration, you can enjoy plenty more kinky history. You can find all of my links inside the bio. Join me on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, or even sign up to Sunroom and start exploring what Kinky History Uncensored has to offer. I'm your host, Esme Louise James, and I will see you next time for plenty more kinky history.
Oh!